Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. For 50 years, Chinese-American photographer Corky Lee documented the celebration, struggles, and daily lives of Asian-American Pacific Islanders with epic focus. Determined to push mainstream media to include AAPI culture into the visual record of American history, Lee produced an astonishing archive of nearly a million compelling photographs. With that, I'd like to bring on the program the director, producer, and cinematographer of Photographic Justice, The Corky Lee Story, Jennifer Takaki. Jennifer, welcome to Film School Radio.
Yay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. This is a wonderful film on a lot of levels. First of all, for a lot of people, just kind of the idea of history of Asian American Pacific Islanders in this country is hidden. There's been some progress in terms of documenting that over the last few years. But at the same time, it's great that we're able to focus our attention on a specific person. It kind of, I think, humanizes so much of the story. How did you get on to doing this particular project?
I totally met Corky randomly. I always wanted to do like little 5-minute vignettes on, like, you know, people with like a singular focus. And I happened to randomly meet Corky, and you can obviously tell, like, as soon as you talk to him, you know immediately he's like a gem. And like, he is a guy who does not falter, who's very passionate about his beloved communities, and that he's different. He runs by his own drum and he does his own thing, and he doesn't get necessarily paid for what he does, but he does it constantly. And it was so important. He was this guy who was really a one-man band who was just trying to push those images into mainstream media for 50 years. I mean, 50 years of doing that.
Well, that's one of the characteristics of someone who is not only devoted to what they do, passionate about what they do, but has the kind of aesthetic of someone, of an artist, in the sense that he's not doing it for someone else, or he is in a sense, but I mean, it's an internal desire, a need on his part to do it because he loves doing it. He thinks he's passionate about it. Does that sound fair? Is that
totally fair. I think Corky was well ahead of his time, and it took all of us a long time to catch up to what he was doing. I mean, now that he's passed, if you look, you know, at the documentation about him, people are realizing what he had done for the last 50 years. But yeah, when he was doing it, I think he was always so there and constant, and, you know, and it was just like, oh, hi, Corky, but nobody really understood the breadth of what he had done. I don't even think Corky maybe understood what the impact would be on a community of not just his community, but the larger community of the U.S. Like, you know, as people learn about him, they don't even know him, but they just hear a story, they see his photos, and people are enamored. And also, I think it's such an important message what he did, because back in the 70s, not a lot of people were crossing cultural boundaries. And Corky was only like in his 20s, early 20s, when he had to establish himself within his own community, right? Because there was so much inherent distrust over documentation back there, because like the FBI and the CIA during the Vietnam War movement and everything that was going on with all the protesters, and there was just such social strife that Corky was questioned within his own community. You know, he had to establish trust there. Then he would like cross into other, like the Japanese back then and the Filipinos were like the major nationalities. And Corky would establish himself in those communities and take photos of what was going on in their communities as well. And then he just kept expanding that as the demographics of the AAPI community expanded.
What comes across to me in watching Photographic Justice, The Corky Lee Story, is that he was kind of a self-contained person. He seemed like, I think that's sort of what I was talking about earlier, in that there was an internal passion that drove him so much, but also very friendly. He seemed very, if you got the chance to talk to him, he's very engaging, it seemed, but didn't seek a lot of attention outside of that. Is that, again, is that?
Yeah. No, he was the first person to shine the light on anyone else but himself.
Yeah.
But if the light shined on him, he was also very receptive to it, yeah. which is so cool, right? Because you need somebody like that. Corky, his brother, John Lee, said it the best. Like, Corky was really driven by the North Star, yeah. right? Which is what you're talking about, that internal compass where he just knew what he had to do. And he really kind of sacrificed everything on the side. Like, it was just what he was meant to do. And so he really never faltered from that North Star. He really kind of resonated with so many people, and it's because of his engaging personality and his charming. And, you know, he was so charming that I think because people meet him or see him, they don't even need to know him, but they'll see him in the film and they can tell that he's like, he's an incredibly quirky, wonderful person. That makes you care about what he cared about. So you couldn't find a better ambassador. You couldn't find a better like subject matter to shoot for almost 20 years like than Corky Lee, for sure.
Yeah. And why all of this matters, why I'm sort of focused on this, is because his photographs and his life story mirrors so much of what I described in the introduction, which is the, I wouldn't say invisible Asian community as the dominant American culture sees it. But it certainly was never, and we see it in various examples in the film of how erased from history that has been. But at the same time, we see this emergence. And one of the wonderful things that I really took notice of in the film was there's one part of the film where he's describing the months of the year and all of the different kind of events that happened within the diaspora of the Asian American Pacific Islander community. And I'm just so taken by that. I think it's a simple thing, but for a lot of people, this just not knowing, just kind of not understanding, is so important. And that's really what comes across so much in the film.
There are people who take photographs, but Corky really made it a part of his vision to include everyone. And so you really get this breadth of like all the different communities that are out there and the importance of those communities. And I feel like that's why it's so hard, you know, to really kind of describe the AAPI community, because it's made up of so many different nationalities with so many different languages and religions. And if by watching this film, at least you get an idea of some of, you know, the larger stories that are out there and why Corky found it so important to film them. So yeah, without Corky's photos, I feel like it wouldn't have been a cohesive story with just, you know, just the Chinese American community, for instance. Like, Corky really welcomed everyone. And he really knew history, like American history generally. Or he even knew just the history of locales. And if he asked you like, hey, Mike, where are you from? And, you know, and then you would tell him, he would connect you to something that you didn't even know happened in your area or someone that you should know. Or he was just a connector, and true to his heart. He just remembered a lot of things, yeah. and held a lot of information. And so all of that experience and all of that love and that passion really kind of showed, and his love for history all really was put into those photos.
So let's talk about, just in terms of your involvement in this project, tell us how long that you were sort of in the midst of making Photographic Justice, the Corky Lee story.
So the actual shooting from the time that I shot till the time it was finished was 19 years, and up to now doing distribution and to get it into the theaters and get it onto PBS has been 21 years. I mean, mine might be a little excessive, but it's kind of like the typical kind of life of a filmmaker. You know, we do it for the long haul.
Well, in some ways, that story mirrors Corky Lee's story, in that you embarked upon this with no real idea of how long it would take and what the ultimate outcome would be. And that's kind of, that feels very appropriate.
Yeah. Corky and I were aligned in many ways.
Let's talk about where he came from.
So Corky grew up in Queens. Elmhurst was one of the places that he ended up living like for over 20 years of his life, the last part of his life. Corky was the son of immigrants, of Chinese immigrants. His father was in World War II, and his mother was a seamstress, and they came over to the States, and they ended up working in laundries, like owning a couple of laundries in Queens. So Corky, as a child, grew up kind of helping his parents with cooking food and, you know, working in the laundries, which I think, you know, he a wee bit resented. He wanted to just be a kid. He just wanted to be an American kid, you know, with a bicycle and going to Boy Scouts. And instead, he was kind of like put into this package that he wanted to break out of. But, you know, in his later years, he didn't have like a lot of Asians in his life until he hit college, when the 1965 Immigration Act had happened and brought over a lot of different, you know, ethnicities, particularly from Asia. It changed and opened Corky's horizon, you know, when he started to meet other Asians at such an older age. I think he decided that that was a really important story. And I think on top of the fact that he saw in middle school, where he saw that photo of the railroad with no Asian faces, that very pivotal 1869 Transcontinental Railroad photo, I think that those combinations kind of just really merged, and he kind of pushed his whole life in that direction.
What turned him on to photography?
He was a community organizer. So when he got this job with this place called Two Bridges Neighborhood Council, and, you know, Corky was the guy that would go and talk to people about their landlords, like, not, you know, they weren't fixing the tenement housings and stuff. And they were, you know, people were living in kind of squalor. And Corky borrowed his brother's cameras and realized that he could use this for change, for social change. So he started taking photographs before and after. And he was telling the tenant, you know, withhold your rent, and, you know, you could get things changed, right? And so that's how he kind of started his whole journey. And that was like after college. So one of Corky's messages for kids nowadays was always like, you don't have to know exactly what you're going to do in life. It doesn't always work out where you kind of grow up and you go to school for exactly what you want to do. And then, you know, like, his message was that, you know, sometimes it does come after and it's okay.
Well, it's a terrific film. And again, it's called Photographic Justice, The Corky Lee Story. And as you mentioned, it will be at the DC Firehouse Cinema, that's John Alpert's outfit, on Friday, April 19th, as well as a theatrical run. And then Lemley. So the Lemley Royal on the 25th, and that will also be the premiere on the 25th, and then the theatrical run will start on the 26th. So you want to check this out. You can go to photographicjustice.com to find out more about Corky and about the film and about how you can watch it. Jennifer Takagi, thank you so very much for spending some time with us here on Film School Radio. And if you're hearing this interview and you live in the Los Angeles area, be sure to check it out at the Lemley Royal on the weekend of April 25th.
Thank you for your support.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.